From the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Jamie Welch, and this is On Target.
I'm Ben Pons. Today on Target, President Trump has announced plans to end the DACA program. We'll examine what the changes are and the potential impacts for our campus community.
Then, we'll talk to Student Senate President Luke Frigon. He'll discuss his plans for Student Senate in the coming year, as well as his thoughts on Senate's process for approving campus speakers. Stay with us.
Welcome to On Target. Today is Friday, September the 8th. We're recording this. I'll hopefully be releasing it in the next, 24, 48, 72, 96, 120, one of those number of hours. And so, the lead story, I think this week in the Gettysburgian, and I think the first thing we ought to talk about is that earlier this week, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced at the Department of Justice that the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, more commonly known as DACA, program will be coming to an end. President Trump later tweeted about that. He did say that if Congress doesn't act in the next 6 months, so this is a six-month deferred ending. March 5th, 2018 is ostensibly the last date for the DACA program, at which point it'll begin to phase out. But the administration, I think, is clearly trying to put this into Congress's court to perhaps codify legislatively as part of a larger immigration package. So we'll see what happens there. Later in the week, President Trump met with Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader, former Speaker of the House, and Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader, and I think they expressed some concerns about the potential end of the DACA program, and I think the president eventually walked back. He said there may be some wiggle room if Congress doesn't act. We'll see what happens. In the immediate term, certainly for the 800,000 young people nationwide who have protection under this program, we should clarify that DACA protection means that you get a two-year reprieve, basically, from any deportation action and a work permit, and you can go to school legally. There are a number of DACA students here at Gettysburg College, we have learned. President Janet Morgan Riggs sent out an email earlier this week calling upon the Gettysburg community to stand with our DACA population here at Gettysburg, our DACA students. And she reaffirmed the college's commitment that if they should lose any financial aid due to a change in their immigration status, the college will foot the bill.
But she was also clarifying in her email that we are not a sanctuary campus. And so she's sort of walking this middle line. So what she said is that they won't actively cooperate with the government, like sending, lists, say, of DACA students for the government to come get the students, right? But they also aren't going to tell the government no if they show up and say, turn over a list of your DACA students. So it's sort of a middle line, and she's been criticized from both sides because she hasn't really taken a stance on this.
Yeah, she has, and I will say, she noted in her email that the college will comply with the Federal Education Records Privacy Act of 1972.
Sounds right.
We'll say that it is. We'll fact check that. But anyway, that they'll comply with FERPA. So if they are legally required by some sort of a court order to turn over such records, I guess they would. But they're not going to just, give it up without a legal,
warrant
being
or
compelled
subpoena.
Legally.
I'm not really sure how that would work exactly. Some sort of court order. But yeah.
Immigration policy is a bit of a confusing beast. So all of that said, I wrote an article that was online on Gettysburgian.com and in our print edition this week, in which I spoke to Emily Vega, who is the president of the Gettysburg Latin American Student Association. And Jamie, you have the quote there. You want to read it, what she told us?
Yeah, so she said, quote, "I was incredibly disheartened and disappointed because Lhasa is my family. This is not just political, it is also personal. This decision to end DACA is not only cruel and racist, but short-sighted and counterproductive," unquote.
Yeah, so she certainly took a strong stance with respect to this issue. And later in the article, she said that, you know, DACA students, and really not just students, anyone in the Gettysburg community. And I think, you know, in Adams County, there's a large population of people who are here with undocumented legal status, many of whom are migrant workers and such. And so there's probably within the larger Gettysburg community also a population of people protected under DACA whose status may be uncertain. And anyway, Emily said that, you know, everyone should feel welcome in the Gettysburg community, and she opened the door of Lhasa as a potential outlet for that. Now, on the other side of the spectrum, the Young Americans for Freedom, or YAF, which certainly I think it's not a biased statement to say that they are one of the more divisive or certainly controversial groups on campus.
That is, they are definitely controversial, that is for sure.
And I think that they do tend to be a polarizing group, whether they intend to be or not. In any case, they released a starkly different statement on their Facebook page that really took President Riggs to task.
Yeah, they condemned President Riggs. I mean, it was very strong language. Part of the statement reads, quote, "President Riggs has made it clear that in spite of her egalitarian email, she places a higher priority on those studying here unlawfully." So that definitely is a strong statement coming from the Young Americans for Freedom. They definitely do not appear to be in support of the DACA students here on campus, and certainly not happy with the financial support that President Riggs has pledged for those students.
Yeah, when we spoke to President Riggs last spring, we did a Facebook Live town hall that was broadcast live right here on WZBT, as well as Facebook Live, since it was a Facebook Live town hall. That's how that tends to work. anyway, we asked President Riggs about that, and she said, as Jamie's having an aneurysm over here that I just talked loudly and their dials flying. Anyway, she told us that, you know, they're Gettysburgians, and no one pays the full cost of a Gettysburg education. So yeah. These are just... it's part of, we admitted these students, we want them to be here, and that's the end of the story. So, I mean, I think she took a pretty firm stance on that in the spring, and I certainly think now that push is potentially coming to shove that, you know, she's not going to walk that back, and I think her email made that pretty clear. Any other thoughts on DACA, Jamie?
My only thought is that, you know, no matter where you sit on the political spectrum, these are students here at Gettysburg College, and I know that, you know, we value community here. So I just hope that everyone can support all members of our community and, you know, not try to ostracize them or, you know, say negative things about people who are studying here with you.
Yeah. And on that note, the Surge blog, which is run through the Center for Public Service, published a post written by two first years who are DACA students. It did not use their names. They published initials, but they these two students who are, I guess, first years here at the college wrote some, I guess, towards the end, there was a large, you could call it a poem, about their DACA experience and how they don't want to be defined by that, but how the, you know, lack of security in being at the college is unnerving. So we will hopefully be following up on stories like that in the coming days and weeks. Next on the agenda, we'll be talking, well, Jamie will be talking to Luke Fregon, the president of Student Senate, later in the program. The first Senate meeting was held earlier this week, and Luke, like the last 182, I don't know, how many years have we been in existence? Since 1832, you do the math. Like every other student Senate president claims that student Senate is going to be taking a more active role in the campus community. And not that I, someone who is one of the most positive people I know, who could never be accused of being cynical, someone who really lives up to that, you know, look at the bright side, you know, think the best thing's going to happen. Not that I would ever have occasion to be a little bit, you know, skeptical. But I just have to wonder whether Luke Frigon is going to be the one who makes Senate into this great activist body that is somehow going to have the ears of the administration and, you know, going to be this big force for political good and everything on campus. If he can, more power to him. I'm skeptical. Thoughts?
I mean, you know, I think Luke, when I spoke with him earlier this week, he definitely, he has the passion for it. He is very excited about his role. Is passion going to be enough to make the administration take them seriously and use them to, you know, as a sounding board and actually listen to what? I don't know if that's going to be enough.
Well, we should say that Luke is the former chair of the Budget Management Committee and treasurer of Senate. So he is uniquely familiar with the budget process. And I think one of the biggest complaints about Senate meetings, and he was very upfront about this, is that they're 40 minutes of budget requests and then you go home. And, you know, I think he wants to figure out a new process. I know he's working with Sarah Berkowitz, who is the treasurer this year, to hopefully identify a new process. We'll see what happens. I just have to say that I think, and I don't think I'm alone that in this view. Maybe I am, and if I am, well, wouldn't be the first time that I have an unpopular or position. Anyway,
we could do an unpopular opinion segment here on the podcast.
We could. It could just be me talking every week. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see what happens. I would be very surprised if Luke, I shouldn't say surprised, I would be pleasantly surprised if Luke manages to get this done. We'll see what happens. And he also talked about sort of the way that Senate is going to look at speakers in the future. And, you know, we'll see where that goes. Of course, this all comes on the heels of last spring, the Young Americans for Freedom. That, funny how they keep coming up. Yes. The Young Americans for Freedom invited Robert Spencer, who was a scholar, I guess, of, well, there was dispute as to whether he was a scholar of Islamic fundamentalism. He gave a speech entitled "The Political Ramifications of Islamic Fundamentalism" that some on campus would have classified as hate speech, and others thought was well within the realm of academic debate, and there was some friction over that. And at the Senate meeting, he was approved through the Senate process very quickly, without a lot of controversy. And Luke, I think, says that that's because no one really knew who he was, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
What did you take from that?
Well, I mean, obviously, we'll find out what he says a little bit later on in the podcast. But I would definitely say, you know, he seems to indicate that he would have, that Senate would have voted differently had they had a week to think about it. And, you know, I want to be sure that, you know, Student Senate is continuing to allow all viewpoints to be heard, because I think that that was the impetus behind, like, why he was allowed to speak here on campus. And it's just, you know, we need to make sure that all viewpoints are able to be heard here on campus. That's very important because Student Senate has, you know, $96,000 each year, and it's very important that that money is spent with everyone's interests in mind.
Certainly. I will say that President Riggs, when we spoke to her a few weeks ago, said that from the college's perspective, she probably would have done it again the way that they did it last spring. The college, I guess, sponsored. I don't know how Todd Green was paid. I don't know where that money came from. I got the sense it was through the college, but we should look into that before asserting that as fact. But Todd Green, who is a professor at a college in the Midwest, Luther College, I think?
Yes, yeah.
Luther College came and offered a markedly different perspective than Spencer on Islam as a religion. And so they did the two speeches, and Riggs said that the Southern Poverty Law Center has guidelines on how to handle controversial speakers, and that I guess they came out this summer, and that the college followed them largely, and she's going to keep them on her desk, she says. So, I would imagine that certainly it won't be the last time we have conversations about this, particularly on the heels of an incident like Charlottesville on another college campus. There are ongoing issues around the country. I know Berkeley has been a hotbed for such conversations. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Hopefully we can avoid devolving into the violence that has occurred elsewhere. But we'll see where that goes. Anything else on the agenda this week? I know tonight is the Salsa on the Square, so by the time this will have aired, it'll have been yesterday night, so hopefully you went, and if you didn't, well, there's always next year, I suppose. It's the 11th annual event. I'm just, you know, throwing it out there. 364 days from now, you can do it all over again.
Absolutely. You just put that right in your calendar.
Yeah, mark it down now. 5:30 to 11. That's 5.5 hours of excitement.
Absolutely. And now here's Ben Ponce with the Bullet Report.
It has been quite a week in Bullet Sports, a history-making week, you might say. Last week, you may recall, for you loyal listeners of On Target, that while we were recording, the volleyball team was going for its 1,000th win as a program, and they got it over Kenyon College as part of the Battlefield Classic tournament. And then they picked up win 1,001 later in the week on Wednesday by defeating Catholic 3-1. The field hockey team lost to Catholic 4-2 on Tuesday. The women's soccer team picked up a win against Stevenson 2-1 on Wednesday. Tonight, the men's and women's cross-country teams are taking on Dickinson and F&M, two of our esteemed compatriots in the Centennial Conference, our dear friends and colleagues at Dickinson and F&M. No sarcasm there. Anyway, the volleyball program has a trio of games on its slate this weekend. Widener at 6 and Keystone at 8 tonight, which will be yesterday by the time you're listening to that. So go back in your time machine and check out those games. And men's soccer hosts Stevenson tonight at 7. We'll have full coverage, hopefully, of all these events in the Gettysburg and Sports section in the coming weeks. Tomorrow, I don't know what happens tomorrow. There's a football game against Ursinus, which will be today, once you're listening to this. It's at home. It's at 1. It'll probably have happened. Who knows? It'll depend how efficient Jamie is when he's putting this podcast together. No pressure.
Right.
Then, coming up this week, on Tuesday, the field hockey team hosts Alvernia for a home tilt at 4. On Wednesday, York College coming here for volleyball. We're going there for women's soccer. Both things happen at 7. The Adams-York rivalry back in action. And on Saturday, the golf team traveling to Penn State Harrisburg for a whatever they do, a match. The cross-country team traveling to Kutztown for some sort of a Division II, Division III challenge thing. The women's soccer team playing away at Washington College. The men's soccer team also away at Washington College. Field hockey and volleyball away at Washington College. I guess we're into Washington College next Saturday. The football team, however, as I'm hitting my microphone, Jamie also having an aneurysm. The football team at 1, home Dickinson. Volleyball team home 3, Rosemont. And that is the Bullet Report in 2 minutes or less.
Well, thanks so much for that, Ben. We'll be right back after this with my interview with Luke Fregon. And joining us now on Target, we have Luke Fregon, the Student Senate President. Thanks for joining us, Luke.
Hey, I'm happy to be here, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
So you had your first meeting on September 4th, Monday. How did it go?
It went well. You know, it was a bit of an impromptu meeting. We don't have a full quorum yet with Senate, So we're thinking of doing some big things this year, but we can't really do any of those things until we've got all our senators and all our club reps and all that fun stuff. So it was rather laid back, but we had pizza and we had a little bit of fun. So it was a good first start. It was.
That's awesome. So did you have pretty good attendance from the clubs, do you think? It was well attended?
Yeah, I think so. I think obviously with it being the first meeting, people are naturally going to kind of maybe be hesitant to come to the first meeting or maybe not have all their things worked out with their club reps. So we saw, you know, I think what we saw was probably 70% of clubs there, which obviously is not 100%. And I think as we get more kind of in the scheme of things, we'll be able to get the more clubs there.
Sounds good. So I know that you said that one of your goals for this year is that you want Senate to be a more activist body on mm-hmm. campus, and you don't want meetings to just be 40 minutes of budget requests and then people go home, right? Which is what it's been in the past.
Exactly.
So a lot of Senate presidents have said similar things. So how do you plan to make that a reality?
Well, I think the unique thing that I have is our rollover budget. So Senate has a very large budget. We started this year with $91,511 in our club's budget. So that's money that can be used for clubs, and that's the money that when budget requests are happening, that's where that money's coming from. Senate has three budgets. We've got that one. We've got our own Senate exec one, which is used to, you know, buy pizza for meetings and buy stickers and that kind of stuff. And then we've got the rollover budget, which is money that's not spent from previous years that all kind of goes into one account. And that's got $64,000 in it. Which is a big number.
Yeah, it definitely
that
is.
That is larger than some departments on campus. And so we are looking to kind of engage with the campus community in the sense that we have this money that we want to spend actively. So we've got students who come to us and they say that they want more of those like water bottle filling water fountains, either right. in dorm rooms or dorm buildings or more in the Cub and that kind of stuff. You know, we tossed around the idea of setting up a Senate scholarship, so something that kind of lasts for a while. Possibly working with the Majestic to get students free tickets, which would be something really cool.
Yeah.
And I think because campus is kind of in this transitional phase, we've got all this construction happening and we're, you know, revamping the website and we're doing the campaign for the college. I think that there's a lot of cool things that we can contribute to. And, you know, in the construction, for example, we kind of talked about it briefly in exec, but maybe putting, you know, some extra TVs in, or maybe putting a few more of those, cool water bottle filling stations. And it's something that we can do because we've got the money to do it. And I think that, you know, on that side of things, that's something that we can do on campus. But I also think that Senate needs to be a body that takes itself a little more seriously, and a body that we kind of make the administration take us more seriously. Because right now, you're right. I mean, we are kind of a piggy bank club. We go, we sit there for an hour, and 40 minutes of that hour is us giving people money. And the way we do that is a little weird. And I think that we can change that. And I think that, you know, when other presidents have said, oh, we're going to be an activist body, we're going to be an issue-based body, I think that's done in good, you know, in good context, and I think it's an important thing to say. But having the funds to do that is important, and I think this year is finally the year to do that and to use those funds.
So you talked a little bit about changes that mm-hmm. you're going to be making, especially to the budget process. And I know that Sarah Berkowitz announced some modifications to the budget request mm-hmm. process. Can you sort of describe what those are?
So, yeah, we're kind of thinking of streamlining it. Because obviously, as you've seen and as anyone who's been to Senate has seen, it's essentially a first-come, first-served basis. We've got this $91,511 that clubs can say, hey, I want $1,000 or I want $500 or whatever. And they do that all on Sarah's end of things. They send her a budget request, they meet with her, and then it goes before the Senate. Excuse me. And I think that's good. And I think it has, you know, you've kind of got the steps of clearance there. But at the same time, it tends to take up all the time in the meeting. And it is kind of confusing for Sarah and for me, because I was Senate President or Senate Treasurer last year. It is a lot of little tiny things here and there. So, you know, we were talking about having everyone bring their club budgets at the beginning of the year or the beginning of semester, because that's how a couple of our other peer universities and colleges do it. But it's kind of the thing that we like the most, kind of the idea that the Senate Executive Board likes the most, and we're going to bring it up at our first full meeting and see what the Senate thinks of it, is essentially Sarah's going to have her budget request meetings on Mondays. So the BMC is going to meet on Mondays, probably Monday in the afternoon. She'll meet with whatever clubs go. So she'll have like four or six clubs go. And their requests will be then made public. They'll be sent out to either the student body or to the student senate for 1 week at the next Senate meeting. So say, you know, Monday the 4th, on Monday the 11th, we will say, okay, they've been approved, like conditionally approved is what we're going to call it. Does anyone have anything to say about them? So that way, instead of seeing the Senate budget request, you know, seeing it for 5 minutes and then voting on it, you have it for an entire week. And that kind of gets out of the way things like, you know, like the Robert Spencer issue that happened last year that kind of blew up. That was something that we approved funds for in Senate. Nobody really said anything because we didn't really know who the guy was. And I think if this is a very specific example, but I think if we had had that week to either ponder or do some research about what he was doing, I think Senate would have voted differently. And I think that shouldn't be limited to just big events. That should be limited to every single event. And, you know, there's the little nickel and dime stuff here and there. But I think it's important that people have time to review Senate requests and not just going to the budget or the Senate meetings to vote on budgets. Because this way we could say, all right, does anyone have any issues with these five budgets? One of them someone has an issue with, so we'll go over that. We'll do it quickly. And if someone doesn't like something, it'll go back to committee. This obviously means that we're going to have to work with clubs because they can't come for money, you know, 3 days before an event now. So it's going to be a long process, and it's going to be kind of a tough process to get used to, both on the executive end, the senator end, and the club rep end. And I think that is going to be something that we're excited about, but obviously it's going to take work. So we're looking to switch it up, and I know that that's a big complaint that I hear about Senate is that it's just budget requests. And so we're trying to take that stuff into account and fix it.
So I want to go back. You mentioned Robert Spencer and how you mm-hmm. think that under this new system, Senate would have voted differently. Mm-hmm. And my question is, do you regret approving the funds, or, you know, do you think that Senate as a whole or the executive board regrets approving those funds last year? And do you think that under similar circumstances, you might consider doing it again? Because I know that at the time it was sort of the reasons for approving it was cited as that the diversity of thought on campus. And do you still feel that way, or has your opinion changed on that?
I think that was an interesting time for the college. I think the college had to kind of reflect on what its values were at that time. And I think Senate was kind of the first contact point there for the Robert Spencer thing. And, you know, if my memory serves me correctly, in the vote, I think I abstained from the vote. But I can check the minutes and you can probably prove me wrong there. I don't agree with anything Robert Spencer says, but that doesn't mean that other students don't agree with what Robert Spencer says. And I think that when you say diversity of thought, that's something that we really need to take into account. And we've seen a very interesting year politically, and that's definitely reflected on our college campus because we do have, you know, we've got the libertarians and the anti-capitalist collective and everything in between.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. And I think it's important to have kind of that diversity of ideas and all that inclusivity of ideas on campus. That being said, you know, at what point do we decide that speakers on our campus don't deserve to be on our campus? At what point do we decide that, you know, if you want to classify it as hate speech, at what point do we decide that that's not okay on our campus? And we are a very small liberal arts college. We're a very private college. And it's important that we bring these speakers because, you know, it's very easy to get kind of trapped in the Gettysburg bubble. And it's important that we bring these speakers to challenge people's views and that kind of stuff. But on that end of things, it's important, but on kind of the logistical end of things for the college, I think the reason we're doing this funding thing is to also help on that end because it was a lot of money for the college. It was a lot of manpower for the college. And I know that it brought people in from outside the community, and that's important, but, you know, at an event that big, it's hard to control who's on campus, and it's hard to control, you know, we've seen things that are happening at Berkeley and Charlottesville and that kind of stuff. We want to make sure that doesn't happen at Gettysburg. I mean, I know the KKK is scheduled to come here in the fall at some point, not on campus, but to the town. And, you know, that's kind of another one of those issues. You know, do we say, no, it's your right to say these things, and it's your right to feel the way that you feel. But at the same time, you know, how tolerant can we be of intolerance? Especially on a campus that sticks so much to kind of the values of community and the values of honor and integrity, you know, it gets blurry, it gets tough. And I think that I don't have a quick formula answer for you for like how to fix that, because it is a national issue. It's an issue that we're facing kind of on every college campus around the country and around the world, really. Obviously, more so recently with the political stuff that we've seen happening, which I think is important because it gets people, you know, off their butts and it gets them protesting or counter-protesting or whatever you want to do. And that's important. I think political engagement is important. And we're doing a Senate voting drive this year, like a voter registration drive, because, you know, if you're 18 and you aren't registered to vote, you should be registered to vote. That's my opinion. I'm sure everyone on Senate exec would agree with me. But I think that's something that we're going to work towards. Yeah. Sorry, that was a very wordy answer. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. So pivoting back onto freedom of expression, President Riggs has said, as she said on this podcast 2 weeks ago, that she really wants to work toward an affirmative statement of what we, you know, classify to be freedom of speech and then what we classify to be hate speech on this campus. Mm-hmm. And she did say that there's the possibility of involving student senate or at least student life committee in this. And I'm just wondering what you see your role and Senate's role in that process being.
So I think Senate has always been the kind of, I don't want to say bottom of the totem pole as it were, but we are of the trifecta of faculty, administration and staff and students. We tend to be the ones with the quietest voice. And that's funny because we are typically the loudest on campus, but administratively, and I think as far as like policymaking goes, we haven't done a whole lot, and so I think as President Riggs looks at this kind of issue of free speech and what we, and it is an issue of free speech and, you know, the poster policy and all that fun stuff, I think as she looks at the issue, I think that she knows that I expect a full inclusion of student senate, because, you know, I sit on the student life committee, but I'm one student, and one student is not enough to represent the views of the student body. And, you know, that being said, Senate, you know, the only reason we have Senate is so students can feel represented. And I don't know that students have felt represented by Senate in the past. And, you know, as a first year, I didn't know about student Senate. I didn't know that it was a thing coming into it. And I think that as a body, I expect to be included in the sense that I want to be the student's voice. And I think the executive board and the student senate as a whole should be the student body voice. I mean, that's what we've kind of said that we are. And we have now an opportunity to put our money where our mouth is with this thing. And I think that as President Riggs and the rest of the administration move forward with it, it's something that we're going to really have to demand to be included in. I expect that we will obviously be reached out to, and I expect that that stuff will happen. But I think we're going to have to not necessarily force our way in, but we're going to have to say, look, we want a seat at the table because, you know, yeah, we're only here for 4 years, but it's 4 years of our lives that we want to at least have a little bit of an impact, either on the Gettysburg College community or on each other or on ourselves. And that's something that we can do. And I think when people hear Student Senate, they think of us as like your high school student council. Like, okay, yeah, we plan a few events a year. We don't do a whole lot. You know, people don't realize that Student Senate is inherently a very political body, and we can take stances, and we can say this is what we want to have on our campus and this is what we don't want to have on our campus. And I think that is something that's never been done before, and I think it's something that I hope to do, and I think it's something that we can all, you know, kind of work towards. And it's not, you know, obviously it's not going to happen in one meeting, but I think over a semester or two, we can actually get some stuff done. And as President Riggs works towards this kind of initiative, and as we work towards our own initiatives, I think we need to work together as kind of the trifecta, the faculty, the staff, and the students, which is something that hasn't happened a whole lot in the past, and we're looking forward to it.
That's great. So we're going to actually pivot a little bit off of Senate and talk a little bit about the rest of your involvement on campus.
Okay. Right.
So I know that you're an admissions tour guide, and you're wearing your name tag right now because I think you have an info session later today.
I do.
But can you just talk a little bit about that experience? And I know that, you know, you're a history major and you're very involved with, you know, giving tours, and you're a certified Civil War battlefield guide.
Yes, sir. Yep.
So just sort of, you know, and how that ties in with your admissions tours. Does some of that history come out in your tours?
It definitely does, much to the chagrin and dismay of my tours. No, it's been so much fun. I love working for admissions. I worked for them for the entire summer. I was a summer tour guide. And I've continued in that role as a tour guide and an info session presenter and kind of like an all-around administrative helper in the office. And that's been so great. I mean, I want to work in that type of, like, have a career in that type of field. I want to do either admissions or development in higher ed, which is something that I would really like to do. And this has been a great opportunity for me to get on-hand experience. And, you know, when you're given 5 tours a day in the summer, you're meeting a lot of cool people from a lot of different places. And, yeah, my history professor will bleed out every now and then, and I'll be like, oh, well, here, Pennsylvania Hall, this was a Civil War hospital. And, you know, I always make a point of telling the students and the families that I give on tour, you know, kind of telling them how important Gettysburg is to national and international memory and history. And, you know, that if they choose to come to Gettysburg, which we would be lucky to have them, how special of a place it is. And I think that, you know, they hear things like, oh, well, you're out on the battlefield right now. And, oh, here's what the first year walk is. And here's what Pennsylvania Hall is. They hear stuff like that and they think, oh, well, you know, it's really, you know, 150 years ago. But I think we really should strive on our tours to give them a sense of place, because it's the first contact. And you can't come to Gettysburg and not know why you're coming to Gettysburg, because, you know, you go to any corner of the globe, you say Gettysburg, and people start reciting the Gettysburg Address or talking about Abraham Lincoln. And so, yes, that definitely bleeds into my tours. And I'm going to continue bleeding it into my tours.
Yeah.
As this year moves along. I'm lucky enough to be on the tour guide executive team. So that's a couple of tour guides who are all seniors who are kind of working on planning events and doing things for the tour guides and info session trainings and that kind of fun stuff. So we are excited about that. And, you know, I honestly couldn't be happier with my work in admissions. I think it's very rewarding work. And, you know, it's not even a full-time job. I do it for a couple hours a week. And I love it. I really do. So I'm excited to keep doing it. I really am. And I'm going to be doing a lot of juggling this upcoming year, what with Senate and the other clubs that I'm involved in and all my battlefield stuff. And I think that admissions is going to be it's one of the heavier ones, because it's a lot of stuff, which is fun.
Thanks so much for joining us, Luke Fregon, president of Student Senate.
Thanks for having me, Jamie.
That's On Target for this week.
We'd like to thank Student Senate President Luke Fregon for being our featured guest today. We'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their support of this project. Please subscribe to our podcast. You can search us in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts, as long as it's iTunes or Stitcher.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha of the class of 2019, who is a music major focusing on composition from the Sunderman Conservatory of Music.